Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Story Selling. My name is Elliot Rayner, and as always, we're going to speak to a product marketing expert about how they utilize the skill of storytelling within the field of product marketing. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Nick Canuppe. Nick is a senior director of product marketing for Juni, the financial platform built for e-commerce. I first got connected with Nick at the PMA summit within Amsterdam. And one of the reasons I wanted to speak with Nick today was about specifically his views on B2B versus B2C and how storytelling can be a great weapon to break down those two worlds. Welcome, Nick. It's great to see you again after a long time since we connected at a PMA summit. How's your week going so far?
It's good to be here, Elliot, and thank you for inviting me. The week has been cold, I think, calling in from Amsterdam. We're on that kind of downward slope towards winter, but super busy. I think the teams are very energized. We've got a really exciting Q4 product roadmap ahead of us. We're actually in Q4 already, but a lot of really exciting things on the horizon. So the teams are very energized and super busy.
That's great. And yeah, living in Amsterdam many years myself, it's the time to save your vacation days to get somewhere a little bit lighter than the end of the year. So hopefully you've got some saved up. But while you're talking about the team and the things that you've got coming up, I always would love to ask you to tell us a little bit more about your current role and what are you and your team, your product marketing team, really trying to achieve right now?
Yeah. So my role is a senior director of product marketing at Juni. What is Juni? So we are a Swedish banking startup. We would like to call ourselves the financial platform built for e-commerce businesses. And what that really means is that we want to make every day easier for e-commerce operators. I think that we believe that e-commerce is quite a large underserved segment when you think about financial services. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gaps in traditional financial services. We've seen the rise of neobanks and the growth and you know, accelerated adoption, but there's still a largely underserved market when you speak to an e-commerce business, whether it's a founder-led or established enterprise. Most of the times, if you say to them, do you feel that your bank is meeting your needs? The answer is like, no. Yeah. So we've set out on a mission to solve the biggest problems that these e-commerce businesses face on a day-to-day basis.
And so it's fair to say you're mainly a B2B product marketer in your role right now, or do you venture a little bit into B2C?
So we'll get onto the B2B and the B2C naming convention. I hate the terms. Yes, correct. So we're going through quite an extensive exercise right now on the strategy around building your ideal customer profile and the personas that operate within. But yes, e-commerce businesses, and it's really interesting when you think e-commerce can mean so many different meanings to who you speak to. So for some, it's a mom and pop's shop.
Yeah,
they've started selling their cakes on weekends, and during COVID, they created an online store. And others, you know, it's the likes of larger e-com or multi-channel e-com or mobile e-com, which is like the Getters or the Gorillas. But really, it's digital commerce, and these are, you know, digital-first businesses that are born out of being digital-first and not necessarily the reverse way, which is traditional retail first and then online second.
Yeah, what's interesting about that is that when you think about the mom and pops in the traditional product marketing way, you would say probably they turn from B2C to B2B through you because they just have an idea. They're a normal person, wouldn't consider them a business. Then you could then setting up their business and then they become more B2B as they grow. And I guess that changes as time goes on. One of the reasons I really wanted to speak with you is I saw you host a really great panel at the Product Marketing Summit in Amsterdam. And your opening question was about what is your product marketing superpower? And you opened with storytelling. And of course, I had my pen ready and I was like, okay, I need to speak to Nick. So he understands just like I do that product marketing is so well connected to storytelling. And with that in mind, tell us about your kind of opinions of what storytelling is when it comes to the product marketing function. Do you see it as a skill, or is it something more innate that you learn at an early age? How have you approached it through your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was very fortunate in my early career. I always had the idea one day that I would have an advertising agency. Mm-hmm. I thrived on being in an environment where you were at the epicenter of creatives, art directors, copywriters, but then you had the suits on the client service side and strategists. And I think it just, I was very fortunate enough to be able to learn the power of storytelling, mm-hmm. Through a medium of advertising. And why I'm not in advertising today is because I also firmly believe you're the master of your own destiny. And you don't really have the power to control that in advertising, because your future is controlled by your clients' budgets. So I kind of pivoted and moved into tech marketing. But I think, you know, how I like to frame storytelling is your story is only as good as how interested the audience is. Mm-hmm. So you really need to understand who you're telling your story to, and you need to understand what they care about. Yeah. I like to frame, if you think of a process, is starting with the end in mind. So if you have a story to tell, what does the end state look like? Or how do you define success? Like, what is the story that you want to tell people?
Yeah.
And then try re-engineer backwards to how to build a plan to get there. And that's really kind of how I've enveloped this idea into product marketing.
Yeah.
Because I think you're telling stories on a day-to-day basis. You're telling a story to your commercial teams while a product launch is delayed. You're telling stories to your customers and your partners. You're also managing internally, trying to tell stories with some level of conviction to get stakeholder buy-in as to how you're prioritizing your product roadmaps. So I think it's, you know, whether we like it or not, it's everywhere. You either have to adapt and kind of refine your storytelling skills, because you can be brilliantly analytical. You can be an incredible project manager, extremely diligent with the way you manage your work. But if you can't actually speak to inspire or get people to buy in or give you their time, it's very tough.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because the way you define what makes a great story, which is how a story can be successful, is understanding your audience and how they feel and what they want. And actually, that's exactly what you would say a product marketer does for a company as well. We're usually the representation of understanding who the customer is and their behaviors and what they want. So it actually puts into my mind why I think storytelling sits so well with product marketers. And then through my experience, the product marketers who I meet tend to be naturally very good storytellers, exactly for the reasons that you've laid out. One thing I wanted to ask you is there a story that since childhood or through your life that you find yourself constantly returning to, whether it be a book or a movie or a song? Obviously, with someone who works with stories every day, is there something you return to every year?
So I wouldn't say that this is something that I return to often, but when I was thinking about this, the knee-jerk reaction that came to mind was Winnie the Pooh. And I think it spurred from, like, you know, my childhood and storytelling, and probably unconsciously or subconsciously where it all started. But if you think about the story and like the mindset behind Winnie the Pooh, you know, the characters in the story, you know, you have Tigger, which is the, you know, ever enthusiastic, happy character. He's a tiger, but he calls himself Tigger. And then you've got Eeyore, on the other hand, who's a pessimistic, like gloomy and depressed donkey, you know, passive and accepting really whatever comes his way. But, you know, the two develop a really close relationship. And I think it's the contrast in their personalities that allows them to learn about accepting their flaws and shortcomings. And I was quite fascinated by digging into this more and more to kind of take a little bit of a life playbook out of this. But, you know, I think as much as we want to be, you know, the ever happy and positive Tigger, we also sometimes can't help but, you know, feel like Eeyore. You know, we're told sometimes to think positive, develop a positive attitude, practice gratitude. But, you know, in reality, that's a lot easier said than done. And I think there's some great learnings on like how to manage your own mindset. And I think it's all about, you know, managing perceptions. And I love to say, if you can understand in life that like there's always a compromise, if you can accept the compromise, you usually will be better off. Yeah. And actually try and even apply that thinking to when I cook a really shit dinner. If you want to try new things, you're going to have to compromise.
That's a good point. And I love the example from children's stories as well. My son is, even at 1 year old, starting to get into the environment. It's a crazy how sophisticated those stories are for children, even when you go back to them. And we absorb them from such an early age that it's no wonder that they become so important to us, from learning lessons and communication, then to all the way into our careers. It's really an elemental thing that we don't really learn how to do it. It just happens naturally, which kind of leads me to my next question. Once you got into your career of product marketing, and obviously you recognized the value of storytelling, how did you then implement that to best effect? Do you find yourself with storytelling just trying to encourage yourself to be a natural storyteller and applying that in your everyday work? Or do you have a certain framework for creating and rolling out stories that you do with your team? So is it more strict or is it just more free flow?
So, you know, I think it's probably different for, you know, different scenarios. I think in general, I like to believe that I'm more of a creative person. Mm-hmm. So I will not survive without structure, because that keeps me kind of focused. But I always think that there's a fine balance between frameworks, which I can sometimes be quite allergic to, and your intuition and gut feel. I think frameworks always have a place, specifically if things are new or you're experiencing hypergrowth. But I think from an experience perspective, it always goes back to, even in meetings, you know, like let's use a GTM kickoff call. Mm-hmm. You already know your audience. Your audience already knows what's coming. Like, it's really up to you that you need to kind of speak to inspire, and you actually need to get the teams rallied up and excited about this new feature that you need to launch. That's over and above everything else that everyone's doing, and explain to them why it needs to be done in such short timelines. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, it's really, you know, understand the audience. And if you look at that from a much bigger scope, when, you know, you go into customer marketing and segmentation, you know, and positioning, I think for multi-market companies, I think we greatly ignore the value of being deeply localized, from your onboarding experience to the way that you address customers in emails to the way someone picks up a phone in your customer success team. I think that there's definitely a big job to be done on defining your audience, or when you do STP or segmentation targeting and positioning. There's definitely frameworks that need to be used, because they also need to be scaled, and they also need to provide visibility for stakeholders outside of your PMM function.
Yeah, and I guess for you can also almost see storytelling as a competitive advantage when your industry of finance, where traditionally you're not very known for very human emotional connections with your bank or or with your financial organization. But with fintech, it seems to be younger brands that are utilizing more storytelling techniques and product marketing to change that, it seems.
Yeah. So I think when you think of like the power of storytelling and product marketing's role, you know, you sometimes define product marketing as looking at the way that you seed a message in a customer's mind, whether it's from a testimonial or from a case study. You know, our job is to really demystify what is considered very complex and make it into something comprehensible. Yeah. And on the brand side of storytelling, you need to touch on the emotional components and really build that trust and relevance. And I think, you know, these two need to live in harmony together. You know, they're not one without the other. And you could probably get some very strong advocates from product marketing saying they don't need brand and the other way around. But I think when you really want to drive impact, it's delivering a story that talks to, addresses a specific need. Mm-hmm. It's quite funny. You can look within fintech, there's a few companies that do storytelling really well. Uh-huh. I'm very impressed with the way that Ramp in the US, uh-huh. I think that they have their content marketing on point with just being ahead and addressing trends. You know, like before we were even thinking about a recession, you know, you can see that they're starting to preempt how to save money, which is, you know, probably one of their biggest, the most important product pillars. And I think that what we're learning at Juni is, you know, we're kind of pioneering a new space where we, you know, like verticalizing banking for e-commerce businesses. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the water that, a lot of where we're heading is kind of uncharted, specifically within the European competitor landscape. But at the same time, you also have a lot of freedom to create your own stories. And I think that's what we're learning, is that you have that creative freedom when you're kind of pioneering or solidifying your positioning in a new category.
Yeah, for sure. I speak a lot about understanding your own brand archetype. I find that most brands, as product marketers, most product marketers should already have a very good understanding of their audience, at least some level. That's what we do every day. But always encouraging brands to actually take some time to understand themselves and where they occupy within the market. What is their tone of voice? What makes them different? What can make you stand out? And it sounds like from the example you gave of Ramp that, yeah, maybe it wasn't just understanding their audience, but maybe they understood who they are and what makes them different.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what's sad is that there's little innovation. So one will set the standard and the others will just produce the same content. And I think that's where there's such a great opportunity to kind of, and it starts with your customer. It starts with being ahead and ready. And as product marketers, you know, you're constantly assessing your customer's need state, the market conditions, the competitors you benchmark against. And that's our job, is to really just constantly distill and feed this information directly back into our internal teams. And if we're not doing that, then we're not doing our job.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because I completely agree. Because if you just follow what's in the market, as you're saying, it'll get pretty stale pretty quick. And I also think when it comes to storytelling, for the examples, what we said, because we're watching things like Winnie the Pooh from an early age, we know bad or false or disingenuous storytelling pretty well. So we know when brands are maybe not being authentic. And so being able to not follow, but being able to be there first and in an authentic way, it's always going to be so much more powerful. And when you look at some of the most strongest storytelling brands, it's those ones that have got ahead. And usually it can always come across very, as a big contrast. Usually it's very different, but it's always a big reward. And maybe that returns us to something that I asked briefly in the beginning and you briefly answered, which is something that I'm trying to explore more in this series, which is the difference between B2C and B2B storytelling. So since I released the last series and I did my workshops and I did the certification, I always get the same feedback is, what about B2B? What about B2B? What about B2B? And from my point of view, actually, it's not as big of a distinctual difference between B2B and B2C, especially when it comes to storytelling, as I think most people think it exists in their minds. But I would be interested to know what your feeling is that when your storytelling approach between those two, what we like to believe are very distinct areas.
Yeah, I think, you know, B2B and B2C were relevant maybe 15 years ago. Uh-huh. But if you look at the way marketing has become so specialized and like the convergence of the way customers interact with the media, I think that like we're still marketing and selling to humans. Well, at least I am. Exactly. So, you know, whilst there's a fine balance between, you know, emotive and functional marketing, you know, I think that if we simplify it, we're selling to a persona, not a business.
Yeah.
And that will never change. I think like Slack, Miro, MailChimp, you know, they've done a great job of humanizing their products and speaking to people. And I think that's something that I try and use in our playbook at Juni, is to kind of keep driving home that we need to appeal to the people in the businesses and not speak to the businesses as if it's a B2B dialogue.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at it now, like within marketing, you've got D2C, you've got C2C, there's B2C, there's probably another five C's that I'm not thinking about. Sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you just wipe those out and you say, who is the person that's going to buy your product? It's a human.
Yeah.
And humans need to understand, they need to rationalize, and they also need to empathize.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, you know, really strong messaging and storytelling is making sure that you touch on those two.
Yeah, I really like the examples you gave of Slack and Miro, because, you know, they, when I think of the communications I get them from our email marketing or from a notification point of view, they speak to me exactly the same way as very popular B2C brands, which is like emotional. They usually don't say from Miro, they say from Claire from Miro, or from Nick from Miro. So they're picking up on those things and realizing, ah, those techniques that work so well there also work here. And to your point, of course they do, because it's still humans behind those areas. And so the same principles of storytelling seem to work. And it brings me to a question that I'm asking everyone at the end of this podcast, which is something that I've learned the most from last year, is this idea of Aristotle's pyramid or Aristotle's triangle, where he puts together that when it comes to persuasion, there are three elements that really are the foundations of it. And that is logic, credibility, and emotion. And I found that when through my storytelling workshops, the best stories always have a balance of those, but sometimes in very different ways, depending on the industry or the audience or the brand or the story itself. And I'd be really interesting to know, when your role right now in fintech, when it comes to those three areas, which is the one you can see yourself leading with more? Would it be credibility, logic, or emotion, or of course a balance between those three worlds?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that these will evolve over time, because the company grows and naturally it changes throughout the life cycles. You know, right now, we're in the growth stage, and we need to really be very clear and articulate in the value that we provide to customers. You know, I think so I would say probably logic in some ways. Like, what is your business? Like, what do you need? What do we offer you? Like, how do we save you time? How do we give you headspace to help? Run your business. It's like you to do what you set out to do. You should be worrying about management tasks and things like that. So like the rational appeal, like what can I gain from this? Equally important, but I would prefer logic. And then I think like credibility is also great. I mean, it's a combination of like social proof and testimony, and maybe even a bit of authority. But that really works when you can say, you know, 1 million users trust Spotify to personalize their music.
Yeah. Nick, I'll just stop you for 1 second, because my connection broke up there and your answer is so good. So if what I'm going to do is ask you it one more time, if that's okay. Brilliant.
Yeah, sure.
So one of the questions, Nick, that I'm asking a lot of our guests is, when I think about Aristotle's triangle, which I use a lot in my workshops, he basically puts forward that persuasion is made up of three parts, or successful persuasion is, and that's credibility, emotion, and logic. And I would love to know, from your experience in product marketing and in the industry you're in now, which one of those three, or a combination of those three, are really you lead the way with when it comes to your current role?
Sure. So I think I'd be leaning more towards logic. So having a rational appeal, what can a customer gain from your product or service? And you know, Juni's perspective, it's save time, save money, get more headspace to actually run your business and do the things that you've set out to do, not focus on mundane financial management tasks. But I think, you know, equally important, depending on the stage of your business and its life cycle, is that, you know, emotion has an empathetic appeal. So it touches on like, what is the value that this will bring? Whereas, you know, in fintech, it's more like reactive. What am I getting from this? Why do I need this? And usually there's a cost associated to that. Exactly. So, you know, when you're in payments, as a payment service provider, you have a website, you have to accept payments. It's a no-brainer. So the second thing is, give me the cheapest or best service. And then I think credibility is they're all equally important, but it really, I think when I mentioned, you know, when you have a million users, it's easy to say a million users trust Spotify to manage them, you know, personalize their playlists. But you need to actually get past that threshold to actually have that authoritative voice, which that's kind of when you're starting to kind of be more mature and established in your life cycle.
Yeah, I think with something like fintech, it doesn't matter how emotive your message is. At the end of the day, it's money, it's finance, it's business. You need to back it up with really solid, logical storytelling to make sure the person feels that. And hand in hand with that is credibility. You know, you're not going to trust someone to manage your life resources if you don't trust them. So I can really imagine the combination of those really changing through your worlds as you've changed your career. Nick, I really want to thank you for joining us. It's been really great. And I really look forward to catching up again soon.
Super, Elliot. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you're interested in continuing your storytelling journey, you can do so right here with the Product Marketing Alliance. Storytelling Certified is a 100% self-paced online course spread over 5 modules, 47 chapters, and over 3 hours of video content. Featuring 9 storytelling templates and frameworks, including the Story Engine Canvas, so that you can immediately start ideating and experimenting with great product stories. Find out more at productmarketingalliance.com.